well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Feel like I should actually be reading Article 1, Section 13 of the Virginia Constitution today, since we're talking about what's going on here in the Commonwealth of Virginia. So Monday afternoon, I had the opportunity to sit down and talk with Pulaski County Commonwealth's Attorney Justin Griffith once again about where things stand. You know, as we head into July 1st, the effective date for all of these gun control laws in the Commonwealth of Virginia, including the gun and magazine ban. When Justin Griffith and I sat down to talk, there was one injunction in place filed in Lancaster County against the Virginia State Police. Shortly after we concluded our conversation, we got word of a second injunction. This one granted in Washington County Circuit Court in southwestern Virginia, where a judge has enjoined enforcement of the gun and magazine ban against the Virginia State Police, as well as several Commonwealth attorneys. Not all Commonwealth attorneys, just the ones that were named in the complaint. Now, NRA has said that this is a comprehensive statewide injunction. I think that is probably true as far as the state police go. I would imagine that the attorney general would believe that the law does not, or excuse me, that the injunction does not forbid enforcement by local law enforcement, by Commonwealth attorneys who are not named defendants in this lawsuit. And what the practical effect of either or both of these injunctions really is, I think it's going to take a few days to shake out. Was talking with William Kirk from Washington Gun Law on a live stream on Monday night, shortly after the news of the injunction broke, and that was basically his take as well. So I know that these injunctions are good news. They're not bad news for gun owners. How much teeth they have, I think, remains to be seen. How long they're in effect remains to be seen. The judges have essentially granted a year-long injunction, but it is possible that the Virginia Court of Appeals or the Virginia Supreme Court could overrule those judges, stay those injunctions, and allow the gun and magazine ban to be enforced while litigation proceeds. There's still just an awful lot that's up in the air. And this is not the only law, by the way, that is scheduled to take effect on July 1st in Virginia. So we've got a lot to talk about with Justin Griffith. By the way, I should note as well, it pains me that I'm having to pre-record this on Monday night. I'm going up to Washington, D.C. today to do interviews with ATF Director Robert Sakata and ATF General Counsel Robert Leiter. I'm looking forward to that very much, but it does mean that I am missing the Tuesday orders from conference. We had apparently one last conference that took place today at the Supreme Court. The five hardware cases, the five age-based cases, all up for discussion. So by the time we talk again tomorrow, we will know exactly what the Supreme Court is doing in those cases. We're going to talk about it with Hannah Hill from National Association for Gun Rights. She's going to be with us on the Wednesday's Bearing Arms Cam and Company. But a great conversation again with Justin Griffith, the Pulaski County Commonwealth's attorney. Really appreciate the prosecutor joining me on the program, not only to talk about sort of the state of play for the gun control laws, but some of the comments that we've heard from Virginia's Democratic politicians saying that they're going to punish prosecutors like Griffith, who have said that they have no plans on enforcing the law. He has a lot to say about that. Take a look and a listen. Well, Attorney Griffith, thank you so much for joining me on the program again. I really appreciate your time.
Hey, thank you. I'm glad to be back.
Yeah. So here we are. We're recording this on Monday afternoon. This will run on Tuesday. So we're, 48 to 24 hours before the effective date of not just the gun and magazine ban, but all kinds of gun control laws. We do know that the ban on carrying so-called assault firearms, that will not go into effect on July the 1st. The governor asked the legislature to delay that for a year. The legislature agreed to do so. So that's one bit of good news. I'm still trying to figure out why the governor made that request, but I'm glad to know that that is not just you who won't be enforcing that provision, but it won't be enforced anywhere in the Commonwealth of Virginia starting on Wednesday.
Well, I think I have a pretty good guess as to why she is requesting that amendment because she sees the writing on the wall. You know, the Hawaii case came down and said local attitudes can neither shrink nor inflate the meaning of the Bill of Rights as they apply to the states. So let's go. I mean, when you talk about the Virginia General Assembly, the United States Supreme Court doesn't give a damn that they have the majority from top to bottom. The majority can't be used as a sword to the Second Amendment. And what the governor is saying is, hey, guys, we just put the redistricting attempt in a box as a dead carcass. Let's not do this with the open carry and get back-to-back L's before we even get going. That's what she's doing. I don't think that's a bridge too far to make that guess. So in my opinion, that's what she is doing, is she's just trying to prevent it from ending up in the same place the redistricting did.
Yeah, I mean, I'm that makes sense. But she's still keeping the gun and magazine ban in place, right, in terms of the sale of these firearms, in terms of the manufacturer and the transfer of these guns. Is that, in your opinion, just because she can't get away with saying, all right, let's suspend that for a year?
I think there has no doubt been people that have listened to the pressure that other Commonwealth attorneys have put on this bill. Other people like yourself have put a spotlight on this bill. I do think they're listening to that. But sure, there are political pressures from people that I don't know and things that are being said to her that is probably going to push this thing through. But as I've said, and, you know, 16 other Commonwealth attorneys have joined me, you know, we're going to put a minimal effect on this the best way we can.
You know, so to that end, I mean, as of Monday afternoon, there's an injunction from Lancaster County that prevents the Virginia State Police from enforcing the gun and magazine ban. We're anticipating a ruling out of Washington County. There's a request to enjoin all law enforcement from enforcing that law. I'm curious. I mean, given that the Virginia State Police conduct background checks in the state, what does that injunction mean as far as you've been able to figure out? Will these items, let's put it this way, what happens if an FFL says, I'm not going to pull these AR-15s from my shelves? I'm not going to, if they have any left, I'm not going to pull these PMAGs down and refuse to let somebody buy them. Are they on solid legal ground in continuing to offer those items for sale on Wednesday morning?
Let's talk about the Lancaster injunction. Let's talk about Jay Jones' previous statements of, you know, Commonwealth attorneys need to enforce our law.
Yeah.
Jay Jones called the injunction disappointing. I don't understand why he didn't call it anticipated. Zero Republicans voted for it, voted for the gun ban bill. The Southwest delegates in Virginia, that's the Democrat, didn't vote either way for it. So you're left with a partisan bill. They should have anticipated facing injunction for this. And, you know, I've said it before, the attorneys that are in the trenches, the litigators for the Attorney General's office, you know, their boss put them in this position, the Attorney General, the Virginia Assembly put them in this position, and some of them may relish to be in this position. I hope so, because they're in the arena now. Jay Jones took the time to tell me how to do my job, so let me give him some advice. I hope that he steps away from the left long enough to make sure the Virginia State Police and the FFL holders are educated on what this injunction is and what it isn't. You know, he campaigned for over a year on this, so none of this should be a surprise. You've got to be ready. I mean, you are ready for this. I'm ready for this. Surely he is ready for this. So Virginia State Police, here in Pulaski County, they're one of the most squared away, organized law enforcement agencies we have. Do you think they like being sued? Do you think they like being on the seesaw that these laws have created? I know they don't. They want to get it right. They want clarity. They want to be able to ask questions. I've been clear with my intentions on this ban bill. Has the Attorney General also been clear with what all of this means? I don't think so.
No.
So FFL holders, you know, that's what they're commonly referred to. I call them a different name in my book. They're business owners. So a business owner gets the merry-go-round of these injunctions wrong. They then lose their ability to earn a living for 3 years, which let's not kid ourselves, they would lose their business. While a man that is convicted of beating his wife can get a 12-month jail sentence, someone going 117 in a 60 could get a 12-month jail sentence. But a business owner that misinterprets the new law could get a 3-year ban from operating their business. To me, all of that is just a backdoor infringement on the Second Amendment. That's all it is.
Yeah.
And to give you a more direct question, no, FFL holders, even with the injunction in Lancaster that prevents the Virginia State Police from arresting them or arresting people in the community, they should not ignore what the law is going to be on July 1st, because I believe they could still lose their license even if they're not charged with a crime, even if their community's not charged with a crime. And let's also talk about the merry-go-round that we've been on. So a member of the House of Virginia General Assembly has interpreted the ban bill one way. The senator that we're going to talk about here in a second has interpreted it a different way. You've had private background checks being required, not being required, being required, not being required. Now they are. You have an injunction in Spotsylvania that was denied. You have one in Lancaster that was granted. We've got one in Washington that's pending. Hell, the Attorney General's office themselves is now qualifying the advice they're giving with, well, it's our understanding at this time. You know, the bottom line is law enforcement, business owners, who I would argue is the most important group, is we the people. We don't deserve this confusion. We deserve a lack of clarity. If you're going to make us eat something, at least tell us what it is.
I think that's a very good way of putting it. Now, you brought up Senator Saddam Saleem, Delegate Dan Helmer, and their difference of opinion as to what this law actually does. I got to ask you as well about some of the comments that we've seen. If you and other Commonwealth attorneys won't do your job, they say, then we're going to come after you, right? We're going to replace you. We're going to replace these sheriffs who refuse to enforce the law. You know, this is something that you and I talked about the last time I had the chance to interview you back in 2020. I don't know if Senator Saleem was in office. I know Delegate Helmer was. I know Senator Scott Surreville was. He's another one who said, we'll go after these Commonwealth attorneys who don't want to enforce the law. They passed a law that specifically says, if you guys and gals, you Commonwealth attorneys, if you go to a judge and say, hey, I want to dismiss this case, the judge has to do it unless there's evidence that you're being bribed, that there's some sort of, you know, discriminatory agenda behind what you're doing. The Democrats empowered you to say, no, I'm not going to enforce this law. Now they're telling you they're going to come for your job if you do that. What's your reaction to this?
You know, look, I pondered for a long time what the best way is to respond to this question. You know, I've concluded I would rather be remembered for the fights that I have, not the ones that I don't take up. You know, I do consider myself a leader. I don't want to hide. I want to advocate in plain sight. I think it's easier for many people to just simply disagree instead of trying to learn while listening. Not for me. I told you the last time I was on the podcast, I learn all the time from prosecutors on the other side of the aisle. Anton Bell, Shannon Taylor, Brian Porter, Amy Ashworth. Let me tell you why I learned from those groups of Commonwealth attorneys, because they will say, hey, Justin, we hear you, but have you thought of this? What about this? How do these things work together? And I've learned to lead through learning from this mixed company. Let me take a time to tell you about Speaker Scott and our Senator Travis Hackworth. I learned from reading about their relationship. Just Google the two of them. They take trips together. They want to learn together. That's how politics should work. I learned when Speaker Scott and Delegate Kilgore host a symposium on how to get along and how to legislate across the aisle. That's the governing I respect. That's what should be the standard that the people demand. I wish threats, you know, were not part of someone's tool belt in advocacy or in legislating or leading, but it is. Hell, you can threaten people and win nowadays. politically speaking, threats are now a weapon of battle for many politicians. I get threats to the media from people that I've never met in my life. It's easier for the Dan Helmers of the world to call the media than it is for them to contact me. Now, the four people I'm going to talk about, I'm going to speak at, I've never met me. They've never had the opportunity to reach out to me. But Dan Helmer said the Commonwealth's attorneys that are not enforcing the gun ban bill are creating a culture of lawlessness, when all I am doing is using my discretion that his Virginia Assembly gave me. He then asked for me to resign, and I guess he just doesn't understand the support in Southwest Virginia, because nothing I've said has anything to do with votes, but you can bet your ass I've gained them, not lost them. So I'm damn sure not going to resign. The second person I want to talk about is Delegate Michael Jones. Again, never met him, never shook his hand. He said the Commonwealth's attorneys that are refusing to enforce the gun ban bill are committing a gross negligence of their duties. That's just another example of someone speaking out without understanding the law allows me to do that. Delegate Cole, again, never met him. He said if the Commonwealth's attorneys are not willing to enforce the law, well, he needs to look into legislation that would hold us accountable. There's already a mechanism to remove constitutional officers for Virginia. It's just another example of a legislator being comfortable enough to speak out against the Commonwealth attorney without knowing the laws that are already in place. Senator Louise Lucas, she said that she absolutely will work on legislation to unseat those that don't enforce the ban. Look, if she doesn't like how the game is going, she just wants to change the rules. And when you have accused of a culture of lawlessness, should resign, negligent of my duties, need to be held accountable. Well, now's my time to respond to that. You know, politically speaking, before you try to take my career and lay me down in my one good shirt, you know, they need to know that there are indeed people who would choose to remain silent on that for self-preservation reasons, for career ambition reasons, for calculated reasons they may believe it's better politically to be quiet. There may be those that are straight scared of them to not comment. But for me, when it comes to defending the rights of my county, when I'm being threatened with retaliation to be removed, they just need to say when, because I'm here.
I gotta say, I love your attitude. I have a feeling that they're not going to be traveling to Pulaski County to shake your hand or to get in your face and tell you we're coming for you. You know, again, they may try to go back and rescind the law that they adopted back in 2020, but they put that law in effect. That's the law of the land as it is right now. And again, as you say, you have the discretion to do what you're doing. And I don't want you to name names with this next question, but I'm just curious to get your general sense. You talked before, and you've alluded to this a couple of times in our conversation, about individuals who are not taking a public stand, right? We've got 16 Commonwealth attorneys who have said, I have no plans on enforcing this law. How many, just your guess, how many more do you think are out there in the Commonwealth who don't plan on enforcing this law, but for whatever reason don't want to take a public stand?
Well, you should Google how many Republican Commonwealth attorneys there are, and God willing, that would be the number.
Have you had conversations with any Commonwealth attorneys? Again, not asking to name names, but have you had any conversations with any of your colleagues who are not committed publicly, but are committed privately?
Yes.
Okay. That is good to know. And, you know, you and I have talked before about the rationale for maybe staying silent. I have to say, I do believe there's strength in numbers, and I don't believe that you all are doing anything wrong, certainly nothing in violation of your oath of office. So I would love to see every one of these individuals stand up and speak out publicly. But I do appreciate what you're doing. I appreciate what the other 15 Commonwealth attorneys are doing. The sheriffs across the Commonwealth of Virginia who've also taken a similar stand, the county supervisors who've reiterated their support for Second Amendment sanctuaries. What is your message to to Virginians, maybe just not even Virginia gun owners, but just Virginians who are disturbed and appalled at not just what is supposedly going into effect on Wednesday, but how we got here. You know, a legislature that couldn't find the time to pass a budget during the regular session, but found time to put in place more than a dozen gun control bills, waging all kinds of, you know, culture war issues, but without getting their dollars and cents buttoned down, trying to amend this legislation via emergency order, trying to successfully amending the law 2 days before it goes into effect in a way that benefits gun owners. But still, you know, we didn't even have Governor Spanberger's proposed amendments until Friday, and the legislature was meeting on Monday. It seems like a lot of this stuff is just, I have a problem not only with the outcome, but I have a problem with the process.
Well, look, the most important thing that members of the Commonwealth of Virginia should do is vote. You know, educate yourself and then vote. I think that is the biggest tool that citizens of Virginia have, is to vote. A couple things that I would like people to take note of, to take a step back and realize is, you know, I'm aware of what Governor Spanberger said about, you know, these guns are designed to commit maximum carnage. I believe that people that do or intend to inflict any carnage, maximum any carnage, should be held accountable in our Commonwealth. Southwest Virginia delegates gave the General Assembly the chance to pass two laws that directly related to public safety. I would ask them to look up House Bill 295. Chief Patron was Delegate Mitchell Cornett. It added correctional officers that were killed in line of duty to the aggravated murder code section. And if you were convicted of the intentional aggravated murder of a correctional officer, the punishment was mandatory life in prison. That didn't make it out of the Senate. HB 102 increased the punishment for manslaughter to 20 years to make it even with the stealing of a generator worth more than $1,000. Chief patron of that bill was Delegate Jason Ballard, both Republicans, both from Southwest Virginia. Both of those bills impacted criminals that were convicted under the highest burden of proof possible, and there were people that had taken lives. Neither of those passed. Now they pass a gun bill to criminalize behavior based on the day of the week under the banner of public safety, but they don't pass those other bills. Come on, man. Let's not put everything under the banner of public safety to try to gain support. Those two bills I mentioned directly fit public safety.
Yeah, absolutely they do. I mean, and you could talk about, you know, they axed the funding for Virginia's ceasefire, which I believe was a targeted effort at, you know, going after violent offenders, giving them that carrot and stick approach. We'll help you turn your life around if you let us, but we're going to put you behind bars if you don't. But either way, you're going to stop shooting. You know, apparently that was to a law and order for the Democrats in Richmond. You know, one final question for you. Wednesday, we have a number of laws taking effect. I mean, there are storage laws for traveling with a firearm. There's storage laws for keeping guns in your home. You know, there's expansions to the red flag statute. Have you had a chance to look at and these are just, by the way, the gun related laws, right? I mean, there's a whole bunch of laws going into effect that don't impact our Second Amendment rights that, frankly, I'm not even aware of. How much have you been able to look at what laws are coming on the books on Wednesday? And are there any laws that you are concerned enough about that you think you're going to take a similar non-enforcement stance? And apologies for the rooster in the background, if you can hear him.
You know, the open carry law was something we spoke about previously, and I told you I needed to educate myself a little more on that.
Yeah.
What I plan to do with that, if the General Assembly rejects her budget amendment, is we plan to take a case-by-case approach to that. There are plenty of things that you have a right to do, but the time, place, and manner should be in consideration. We're going to judge the open carry law if it does move forward on a case-by-case basis. Same thing regarding the locking up of your gun inside of a car. I don't envision a scenario to where I prosecute someone for that. I mean, you could be extremely negligent, I guess, and go somewhere to where, you know, a school where guns are not allowed to be on school property anyway. Leave your car unlocked, leave a loaded rifle there. You know, we would prosecute you for that. But as far as a blanket declaration of not doing it, no, sir, other than the laws we've talked about on this podcast.
Okay. Well, I know that, you know, these legal cases are going to continue. The political back and forth is going to continue as well. And I hope that we can touch base here and maybe another couple of weeks, a month, and just kind of see where the lay of the land is. But I want to thank you again, not just for joining me on the program, but for really speaking out in defense of our Second Amendment rights and our rights under the Virginia Constitution as well.
Well, you're doing it for the right reasons. It's an easy thing to do.
Well, Justin Griffith, thank you so much for your time, sir. It's good talking with you again.
Awesome. Thank you.
And thanks to Justin Griffith, Pulaski County Commonwealth Attorney, for being with us on the program. Looking forward to talking to him again here in a few weeks. Right now, let's turn our attention to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there with a case out of Texas. Two Boozers Jewelers robbery defendants sentenced to deferred probation, which is, I mean, that's a sweetheart deal considering that nearly $2 million worth of stuff was taken in the armed robbery. 60-year-old Tonya Freeman, her daughter, 37-year-old Tonisha Freeman, placed on deferred probation for 10 years, fined $1,500 by a judge. The mother-daughter duo pleaded guilty on May 29th to third-degree felony theft of more than $30,000, but less than $150,000 in a plea deal with the McLennan County DA's office. These two not considered the ringleader of the robbery crew. That's a gentleman named John Rainwater, who pleaded guilty to the jewelry robbery as well as the robbery of a Waco bank, and also acknowledged his guilt in the robbery of a place called Ollie's Bargain Outlet. Rainwater got to 25 years in prison in November. Others who pleaded guilty for helping to facilitate the sale or transportation of these stolen Boozer's items include LaWanda Lynette Joyner, who was placed on deferred probation for 6 years, Sabrina Glasker, who was placed on regular probation for 10 years, Jessica Renee Tolbert, also pleaded guilty on May the 4th. She is set for sentencing July 17th, the DA's office recommending deferred probation in her case as well. Store owner Brad Boozer said back in November that he was, quote, very satisfied with the sentence that John Rainwater had received. He thinks that justice was served, calling it a terrifying thing for my employees, especially the ones who were in the office when this happened. Apparently, he has not been interviewed to ask what he thinks about all of the probationary sentences that Mr. Rainwater's co-defendants have received. I didn't realize it was possible, in Texas no less, to participate in a robbery in which nearly $2 million worth of merchandise is taken, and then you walk away with nothing more than a probationary sentence, deferred probation at that. All right, on to today's Armed Citizen story. We don't have a ton of information. This is a fairly new news. This is from Berkeley County, South Carolina, where authorities say a man acted in self-defense when he killed his cousin's boyfriend. Incident happened back on June 27th. A passing motorist found an adult man suffered from a gunshot wound near the road in St. Stephen, South Carolina. Deputies responded to the scene. The injured man told them that he had traveled from Georgetown County to meet his cousin, 34-year-old Olivia Nance, at a nearby home. Authorities say that Nance and her boyfriend, Harry Phillips, got into the vehicle with the victim. The three began traveling down the road once they got to their destination. Nance's boyfriend, Harry Phillips, brought out a gun and attempted to steal the victim's vehicle, firing a shot and hitting the victim. The victim then left the vehicle, ran into the woods while Phillips chased after him, continued firing shots at him. When Phillips ran out of bullets, he began pistol whipping the victim in the head. That's when the victim brought out a knife and stabbed Phillips in the chest, resulting in his death. Despite being shot, the victim was able to make his way out of the woods, collapsed near the road. That's when he was discovered by the passing motorist who took him to the hospital. Following the incident in the woods, Nance fled the scene in her cousin's vehicle. She then hid the vehicle in the woods before hiding out at a home. She has since been charged with obstruction of justice. Police have determined that the victim acted in self-defense, with Phillips' death being ruled a justifiable homicide. So not self-defense with a gun, but you know what? The right to keep and bear arms applies to bladed weapons as well. And this is a definitely an armed citizen story and a defensive knife use for our friends over at Knife Rights. Finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. A good Samaritan helped a victim involved in a wrong-way crash on Interstate 93 in Massachusetts. This from Channel 7 News in Boston. Aiden Fitz says it was just human instinct. He said, I feel like that's what any person would do. He said, I'd want someone to do it for me or my family member. He said, if I see someone in a bar burning, I'm running in any time. Well, it wasn't a burning bar. It was a demolished car. Authorities say it was late Saturday night. Two cars crashed while trying to avoid a wrong-way driver. The man behind the wheel of a white sedan collided head-on. That driver did not survive the crash. Fitz says, I went into the passenger side. I was just keeping him conscious, shaking him, tapping him. He was coming in out of consciousness. Investigators say an 81-year-old man will face charges in connection with the crash. As Channel 7 in Boston notes, the wreck, one of several deadly wrong-way crashes to happen in recent months. Aiden Fitz says, you know, just a 28-year-old kid driving on the highway, someone comes at him. He says, losing anybody is terrible, but that young and him being a no-fault, it's terrible. It is, and I know that Aiden Fitz, you know, may feel bad that he couldn't save that gentleman's life, but just being there in those final moments so that 28-year-old didn't die alone. That is an act of kindness. That is an act of heroism. And Aiden Fitz, in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing for a dying man. We thank you for your very, very good deed. All right. That is all the time we've got for you on this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I do appreciate you being a part of the program as well. Looking forward to being back with you again tomorrow. We will again talk about today's orders list, what happens to the hardware cases, what happens to the age-based cases that the Supreme Court has been holding on to for months. And we'll also talk with Hannah Hill from National Association for Gun Rights about the impact that Wolford and Hamani, but I think more Wolford than Hamani, is going to have on Second Amendment jurisprudence going forward, including other hardware cases, including age-based cases, waiting periods, all kinds of issues I think are going to be impacted by Wolford because of what the court laid out in terms of the test that needs to be used to determine whether or not a modern gun law has any kind of historical analog. So looking forward to that conversation as well. Have a great rest of your two-way Tuesday. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well. Be safe. And be free.